The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
So if you're on a road trip throughout America, be safe. Hope you had a good holidays with the family. You've heard 4 hours and now going into a fifth hour of Peter Burns and Field Yates. And we haven't really actually at this point even cursed at each other or been upset at each other, Phil. I feel like this is a much better relationship than like 90% of the other co-hosts I have when I host shows.
Just a couple of best buds having some fun on a Wednesday, yeah. Getting you ready for the second to last day of the 2020 year, ready to turn the page to 2021. Good times had by all.
You can follow him on Twitter at Field Yates, at Peter Burns, ESPN. The show is always presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline, where I'm surprised that we did not hear from Mike Golic Jr. over on the Goodyear Hotline earlier today, as I did make a little bit of an announcement when we were talking about the college football playoff and some of our predictions. Here's what I had to say for Gojo.
Are you required to make a pick on each college football semifinal or no?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't even have to think about Alabama Notre Dame, right? I'll get a Mike Golic Jr. tattoo if Notre Dame ends up defeating Alabama.
Is that definitive or no?
I'll put it on right now. Tell Gojo right now. Hit him up on Twitter. I will get a Mike Golic Jr. We're not talking like tramp stamp. We're not talking anything big, but I'll get like something like on the left cheek or something like that along those lines if Notre Dame beats Alabama, because it frankly is just not going to happen. I stand by it. I started thinking about how I should probably kind of walk that back. So therefore, if it doesn't happen, but the more and more I look into these college football playoff, matchups, I don't think once again, Field, I don't think we're going to have very good matchups. Last year, Ohio State and Clemson was a fantastic matchup. I think Clemson has too much firepower for Ohio State, who feels like they play every single game of the season this year like it's their first game of the season. They don't have that momentum. And I do think that Alabama is just this factory assembly line of success. And I think this arguably might be Saban's best squad that he's ever had in Tuscaloosa. I feel pretty damn confident about this tattoo bet right now.
Yeah, I'll agree with you.
I think this has to come into question now, Peter, and I appreciate you guys.
Oh, God, he's here.
Oh, he's here. Wow.
He's here.
And I'm just wondering now, when it does go this way, do I get to pick the picture of me? Because I think it's only right now. You put it out there. It exists, and there's no going back to it. And again, we can talk about it. It's long odds, all that stuff. I understand it, but I just want to now start negotiating a little bit more. Do I get to pick what picture of me goes on what cheek?
Field. I just went on this whole thing, Field Yates, about how you and I had a good relationship, that you are just throwing me underneath the bus. I tell you what, Field, you and I, Gojo, you've got to put up some salt in the game as well, too. Like, if I'm saying, and I'll give you some odds here at some point, not necessarily a point spread, but, listen, you don't need a point spread, right? I mean, Brian Kelly said there's got nothing to prove. They've had a successful season. What are you throwing to the table if I'm willing to say I'm willing to get a Mike Golic Jr. tattoo if Bama loses?
I'd be willing to get a tattoo. I don't know if I'm going in the Peter Burns tattoo route. You also have to remember, I am covered in tattoos.
Correct.
So jamming another one on my shoulder really isn't as much skin in the game in all of this. So if you want to make it equitable, I can go that route with you. But you tell me, Peter, there's got to be something that means a little bit more to you that might be within more of the bounds of what we're looking for that you want out of me, since I've heard you are supremely confident. I've heard you and Field talking about this. I heard you and Taylor Twellman on the other day. We got no chance, yada, yada, yada. So what are you looking for in this? What would make you feel whole if we were going to get you in this tattoo bag?
Here's the thing. I need you, ESPN radio listeners, need Max Kellerman listeners to hit me up on Twitter right now. What should Gojo's side of this Alabama-Notre Dame bet be? At Peter Burns ESPN. Let me know. I'll get back to you at the end of the hour because I don't want to rush this. I rushed my tattoo bet and I just put it out there and I couldn't reel it back. I don't want to rush mine over on your side. I do, though, however, want to talk about this matchup and the amount of pressure. And in all joking aside, Gojo, is there truly pressure on the Irish in quote-unquote the brand, or can this team not have to pay for the sins of former Irish letdowns?
I think, if they lose this game in the fashion in which Notre Dame's lost games in the past, they're going to get lumped into all of those. That's exactly what we know, but that's also why there's, I don't think, as much pressure as people would like there to be in this situation, because what happens every time we get to this and something bad happens like this? we wind up in the same spot next year, where if Notre Dame wins at a level that seems worthy of the college football playoff, they find their way in. They're involved in all these conversations. Like, the brand doesn't take a major hit. And I point this out all the time in sports, where if your worst crime is losing to someone in the middle of an all-time great run, if you're the Raptors in the Eastern Conference running into a LeBron James ceiling, if you're the rest of the NBA that hit the Golden State Warriors or the 90s Bulls or something like that, does that really make you the worst thing in the world? No, it might keep you out of that upper crust, but I look at this and say, yeah, there's pressure because as a Notre Dame fan, as a lifetime alum, and as someone who loves college football, you'd love to see them back involved in the mix in that way, but I don't think it's some sort of life-and-death pressure that's going to crush the trajectory of the program.
All right, so, Gojo, let's get to it then. How confident are you? Like, do you believe Notre Dame has a chance, a good chance, great chance? What's your level of expectation going into this game on Friday?
I mean, they have a chance. Listen, it's not a great one. As Peter said on this one, I think there's a legitimate claim for this to be one of Alabama's best teams. And if not, at the very least, it's overwhelmingly the best offense they've had. And with some of the players they've had in that program, that's saying a lot. But Notre Dame's got a chance just like they do in all of these games. And the formula's never changed. Like, the difference between the ACC championship game and Notre Dame playing Clemson in the regular season was, yes, the presence of some great players, which contributed to what I'm about to say next. But it's also missing layups early on in these games. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame in the game in the regular season against Clemson, what did they do? Big run on the second offensive play of the game. Get that one going on there. Big stops early in that game. They jumped out to a lead in that game and made Clemson have to play a different brand of ball than they necessarily wanted to in that spot. Clemson still put up a ton of yards. Clemson's offense still looked great, but they capitalized on opportunities when they had them. What happened in the ACC championship game? Notre Dame drives down in their opening drive, has to settle for a field goal, intercepts Trevor Lawrence, takes it down, has to settle for a field goal and misses. You missed two layups early in that game when you had the opportunity, and then talent's going to will out. It's the same story I dealt with in 2012. It's what Notre Dame dealt with in 2015 in the Fiesta Bowl, is you're going to be outmatched roster-wise against teams like Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State right now based on the way that they can recruit. And so if you miss those opportunities early, you're not going to recover in these games. That's always the difference, but Notre Dame, rest assured, has had these opportunities in all these games. This group just has to capitalize.
Mike Olick Jr. joining Peter Burns and Field Yates here on the Max Kellerman Show. And you're right. For Notre Dame to win, it has to be one of these choose-your-own-adventure books, like as a kid, and you make the right decision every single page, right? You can't, like, make a wrong step. And they did that against Clemson right early in that game, and Clemson at full strength made them pay for it. I want to go in a different direction here. Last night we saw the Cheez-It Bowl, which, by the way, what you and Fitz did is nothing short of fantastic on behalf of it. It's great. You guys own the brand. It was great. However, we saw an interesting deal. I'm sure you guys will talk about it as well. Tylan Wallace ends up playing a half for Oklahoma State. Coveted wide receiver, if you don't know it. And at the end of the game, Mike Gundy, his head coach and offensive coordinator, Casey Dunn, said that was the plan all along. What'd you think of that decision by not only Wallace, but of the Sooner or the Cowboys to do that?
Well, I put it this way. Whether that's the truth or not, I'm encouraged by the fact that he was supported in that way by his coaching staff in this decision, because this was going to be something that was widely debated and criticized. And so for it to be a unified front coming out of Oklahoma State that went through its fair share of strife between players and coach at the beginning of the season, I thought that was encouraging. And listen, I get it. Like, at this point, I cannot find myself getting upset about decisions made by guys who aren't being paid in a place that's not going to pay them when they're on the cusp of finally being able to realize those dreams. I understand part of it goes against the team ideal and all that stuff that we talk about, but we've just seen the game's gotten too big around it. The money's gotten too big around the sport right now, and kids are turned into pros during recruiting. It gets too much too soon. And so for them to sit there and for me to sit here and act like they should ignore what all the rest of us see around it, I just can't find myself able to get up in arms about something like that. I understand these guys looking at it as more of a business decision if that's what ultimately drove it. I mean, hell, we saw Derek King go down in that first half. You can't tell me that even if that decision wasn't already finalized at that point, that didn't make sure, all right, I don't really feel all that bad about not going out there in the second half because the best player on the field for the other team just went down for an injury in a game that's not going to give any of us national championship. I'm not going to call them meaningless bowl games, but we know there's a different level at stake. And so I cannot criticize. I can do really nothing but support the decision Tylan Wallace made for the best interest of his future.
Yeah, and part of it I think that's jarring, Gojo, is that if the truth was that he was planning on playing just a half the entire time and had nothing to do with Derek King's injury, it's like that's the first time, at least that I can recall, where a player has said peace out at halftime by design, right? So, like, newness sometimes makes us uncomfortable. Spinning back to the college football playoff, Friday, obviously, two big games, and while many believe the Alabama-Notre Dame game may not be super close, there's a chance the Ohio State-Clemson game will be close. I think Ohio State's complicated, Gojo, because they've only played six games this year, and the best they've probably looked start to finish during a game was Penn State. When we thought Penn State might still be kind of good, obviously Penn State lost its first five games this season. How do you size up Ohio State as a team, and can they pull the upset of Clemson? Because it feels like a lot of people are calling Alabama-Clemson part, whatever it is, 19, a slam dunk.
Yeah, no, you can count me in that. I'm pretty sure Old Takes Exposed has one of my tweets ready to go if the Notre Dame-Alabama game goes awry, because I was one of the ones that said after the ACC title game, we're in line for Alabama-Clemson part whatever and all this. I think Ohio State is capable personnel-wise, but I think for them, my biggest concerns are just what you mentioned. They are the poster child for all of the things that people had to deal with in 2020. Clemson had to deal with this in its own right. They lost their star quarterback for a couple of games because of COVID-19, but they've timed up now to play their best ball, be healthiest and wholest at the best time of year versus Ohio State that was down, what, 22 guys for the Big Ten championship game that had its starting quarterback openly in an interview after the game say, yeah, I might have played with a sprained thumb today where he didn't look 100%, maybe the worst game we've seen Justin Fields play in the course of this. And so I think with the rushed start stop at the beginning, only playing six games, and now dealing with all of these complications because of the virus and the pandemic at the end of the year, I think it puts them in a really vulnerable spot here where you've got one side firing all cylinders and you've got the other side trying to remember what that feels like with a lot less time to prepare for this. So Ohio State talent-wise will always be capable of winning in these kind of games. I just think all the surrounding circumstances make it really unlikely.
And I don't think that there's a doubt. I brought this up earlier in the show, Gojo. It feels like Ohio State is playing its first game of the season every week of the season. Like they just haven't had that momentum yet, and that's why they haven't been firing on all cylinders. And maybe that's why it might be a good Clemson first half play if you decide to gamble on such things. My last question, Gojo, way out of left field, but incredible birthdays today. LeBron James and Tiger Woods both born on this date. So my question: if young Gojo goes into it's like a Freaky Friday situation, you can have the life and just the run of either one of those incredible athletes. You taking LeBron or you taking Tiger?
Ooh, all right, this is a great question. A couple things involved here. One is someone who now has moved into the more sedentary portion of my lifestyle. I feel like being Tiger's pretty great for that because golf is way less. I know the surgeries and everything else, but way less physically demanding in all of this. That being said, I have always, again, because even when I was playing, I was closer to the sedentary side, wanted to be able to do some of the things athletically that LeBron does. So I would probably take that career trajectory there. He's been able to do impressive things on and off the court. Didn't have the driveway incident that we had to deal with Tiger Woods, but career trajectory, I would say give me the ability to just go and dunk whenever I want. How fun would that be?
Not to be overlooked, by the way. It's also Carson Wentz's birthday today. You could have potentially taken Carson Wentz's life too. Would that be interesting to you right now or no?
Honestly, you know what? Carson Wentz's life, yes, has taken a turn relative to his world, but that's still
dude. He's making $32 million to not play.
That's what I mean. Like, honestly, yeah. As someone who I have always said backup quarterbacks are my favorite players in football, and that every backup quarterback ranking should be what is your salary divided by the number of snaps you've actually had to play in your career. Carson Wentz is on his way to winning the game late in this one, so I am not going to turn down that work if it comes my way, rest assured.
Yeah, if you're going to win the Matt Flynn Best Contract Ever Award, that's a pretty damn good one to get. What Carson Wentz has.
I don't want Gojo to leave yet, by the way, because I had a thought. So if, like, the reciprocal, like, if whatever you're willing to wager, Gojo, if Pedro is willing to potentially have you tattooed on his left cheek of a picture of your choosing, like, as you noted, you have tattoos all over your body already. Like, would we have to remove a tattoo if you lose this bet?
I mean, listen, there's a couple I would like you to remove. Like, look, you don't get this many, and you don't start getting them in your late teens and early 20s without having a few on there that are poorly done and kind of regrettable. So if I get to choose which ones you guys take away, we could absolutely work that in the deal. I got to clear room for the good artwork now that I can afford it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, give us one. What's one you regret? Just the three of us here having a conversation.
What's her name?
No one can hear.
What was her name? Yeah.
Oh, God, you know what? Thankfully, have not gone down that road yet. My mom doesn't care that I get tattoos. She might actually kill me if I had done that. But I got, you know, I did the thing when you're a very original, free-thinking college kid, enlightened by what you see on campus. And I got Faith and Family tattooed in Old English going down my biceps by a guy that wasn't that great of a tattoo artist. So now, on one side, the letters have kind of let out, and they're kind of different sizes and shapes, and it's not the best look in the world for me. So I think if I could go back and undo it, I would probably undo that one that was a hastily done decision going with my other friends who were getting tattoos. That was college football at its finest.
I absolutely love this. I've got 45 minutes to come up with either what tattoo I remove or what tattoo we get on Mike Golic Jr.'s body, as opposed to me, who has virgin skin. I've never been under the gun. So hopefully Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide take care of business, or this is going to be extremely awkward. Go, Joe. Thanks for a couple of minutes at the time, my friend.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
There you go, Joe. Mike Golic Jr., ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save at Progressive save over $750 on average. Field, are you a gambler? Do you like? Have you made these bets as far as, even not in monetary wise, but as far as dumb bets in your fandom career?
Yeah, I made some dumb bets. Oh yeah.
Because I'm trying to think. So I just had, like, I live in a house divided. I'm a big-time LSU fan. I married a diehard Alabama fan, which obviously was great last year. This year, not so much. And so I ended up having to take a picture of myself in an all-Alabama onesie for our Christmas cards, which was not the wisest material.
Worth it.
Maybe not so much. So I ask you guys that. Hit us up on Twitter, at Peter Burns, ESPN, at Field Yates. Or you can give us a call as well, too. The worst bad idea bet you've ever made.
Ooh, okay.
I do want to hear
like
some
it.
Of those. 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And reminder, college football playoff semifinals and final are on ESPN Radio and on ESPN right here. Coverage on the Rose Bowl and Sugar Bowl on ESPN Radio begins Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Peter Burns, Field Yates, Bad Bets next on the Max Kellerman Show.
Max, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, Peter Burns, Field Yates. You can follow us on Twitter at Field Yates, at Peter Burns, ESPN. This show presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And I asked that question as me and Gojo, Mike Golic Jr. earlier, made a small little wager on Alabama Notre Dame, which we didn't even make the wager. I just put it out there. I was so confident, Field. You drew that out of me that I would say I would get a tattoo of Mike Golic Jr. if Alabama lost to the Fighting Irish. And Gojo, in surprising fashion, said, hey, I'm in for a bet as well. So it's turned out that way. So I've asked for the worst bet you've ever made. Brian is in Louisiana. Thanks for joining Peter Burns and Field Yates on the Max Kellerman Show. What do you got for us, Brian?
Well, I'm an LSU grad and now a Catholic priest. And the principal of our elementary and high school is a Mississippi State grad. We bet on the LSU game 3 years ago, and because I lost, I had to sing and dance to I'm a Little Teapot. And the fifth grade actually made me. So it was rather funny, if a little humiliating.
I was going to say, at least the Lord allows you to be a good guest, at least a good sport about that. That might have been the Dak Prescott year, Field. So, I mean, listen, I think that was it happened when Dak was playing extremely well and they went up to and beat LSU. I think that was in Baton Rouge as well, too.
Could be right. I'm going to take you at your word on that one.
It is interesting. So quick story about Dak Prescott in that game that LSU got destroyed by Mississippi State. This was a year that Mississippi State was playing pretty well. I had interviewed Dak Prescott for SEC Network when he was over at Mississippi State and Dan Mullen was the head coach. and we talked about it. And right before or right after the commercial, or right after we taped the filming, we're taking off our microphones, and I told Dak, I was like, hey, listen, I'm a kid from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a diehard LSU fan, and I jokingly said, hey, make sure you guys take it easy on the Tigers, kind of laughing and not making a big deal out of it. So obviously they destroy LSU in that game. The next week, he's the player of the week, so he comes on my show on SEC Network, and as we're starting the interview, goes, Mr. Burns, I want to apologize for what I did to the LSU Tigers. And I was like, damn, I'm supposed to hate you, Dak Prescott. And he, like, it was a legit, it wasn't like him trying to give me some hell, like a hot, like, social media take and somebody in the Twitter mentions. He was actually legitimately apologizing. So I became a Dak Prescott fan, even though they broke my heart at a state that year.
Yeah, by the way, just a reminder of how much I miss Dak Prescott. We all do, right? I mean, what a remarkable start to the season he was having, really, in spite of the defense and other factors around him. And can't wait to have him back. Certainly somebody who has everything he has earned has certainly been through hard work and excellent football character as well.
There's no doubt about that. And he's a guy that I feel like has made the jump from the college game to the NFL game pretty successfully, right? I mean, I think that the NFL lends itself to be a little bit more friendly to college football quarterbacks now. We're seeing that more the way it's built. Now, the big question that came up earlier this week was the fact that would it be Urban Meyer, legendary head coach at, you go back to Utah, and then you go back to Florida and
Bowling
Ohio
Green.
State.
Don't forget Bowling Green.
Bowling Green, yeah. Right? The fighting Damian Woody's. Woody went to
BC.
Boston College, BC.
Yeah.
But hey, now the question is,
too. We're a big BC household now.
So. Oh, there you go. Yeah. And whether or not if Urban would have success. And naturally, the first name that comes to mind, the Jacksonville Jaguars, overall number one pick. Field, you've been around NFL front offices. That works or does not work, Urban Meyer, on that level?
I think Urban Meyer, the head coach, works on this level. I have skepticism about really anybody handling both head coach and general manager duties, which is something that's been floated around because Urban's in a very unique spot in terms of leverage, right? It's not necessarily a perfect analog to call him John Gruden in this regard, but some tenets that are similar, right? Even if he tells you, I'm never going back to coaching, every offseason we're going to wonder, is he going back into coaching? Will he do it at the pro level? Will he do it at the college level? Remember, John Gruden at one point was floated as a potential head coach at Tennessee, where he had at one point coached on an assistant level. So I think Urban's going to have plenty of leverage and the opportunity to potentially say, like, even if I'm not the GM as well, I have significant personnel influence. But I do think if he is the head coach, he is an outstanding program builder. He's going to be given time because wherever he signs a contract to, if he becomes a head coach, it's not going to be like a 4-year deal. If he wants a 7-year deal, get a 7-year deal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this could be like what Matt Rhule got with Carolina, which was the 7-year contract last offseason, the longest amongst all new head coaching hires last year. And by the way, Matt Rhule's done a pretty good job of sort of laying the foundation there in Carolina, as you know well. Here's the deal with Urban Meyer, is that not every head coach that was successful in college had success in the NFL. As a matter of fact, there are probably more notable examples
Spurrier,
of guys not
Chip
doing it.
Kelly, right. Yep. Right. Yep.
But some have.
Saban.
Saban, a good example of it, obviously, even if it was a short tenure in Miami. I would believe in Urban Meyer because what he did in college, it was not – I don't want to – sort of mitigate the accomplishments of some of the other coaches that we're talking about, but like it wasn't so much that Urban Meyer was revolutionary, which is kind of some of the words you'd hear about like Chip Kelly, his sort of revolutionary offense, fast paced, and you know, certainly prior to that, Steve Spurrier and sort of the running gun, the high octane offense at Florida. In Urban Meyer, it was like just sort of like pro style football, right? It was just sort of like, you know, recruit well. Respectable teacher, leader, communicator. That's something that has been
It was more culture and leadership as opposed to X's and O's, correct? Yep.
So it is that is sort of translatable to the NFL level in a way that not other college coaching strengths are.
I will say this, though. When we're talking about Hall of Fame coaches possibly taking over the Jaguars, I do find Urban Meyer's name to be interesting. But why not go with someone who's done it on the NFL level? Why not go for the biggest and the best? And why not go for Bill Belichick? All joking aside, right? I mean, Belichick has clearly shown, listen, the frustration that he has about how the Cam Newton situation has worked out. Jared Stidham was not ready. They don't have a great draft pick. I mean, you need to tell me right now that he's so sold on what you have at the Patriots that would you not, I mean, would you not at least start? If you're Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, do you not at least have the conversation and kickstart it and kick the tires? Think about it for Belichick, right? If you're Belichick, you leave the Patriots, you could go to a situation where you're going to have an unbelievable amount of cap space. I think the Jaguars have the most cap space, if not top five cap space, going in for free agents. You have a bevy of different draft picks because they traded away, in essence, a bunch of their players. You're going to be set, and hopefully you're quote-unquote next Tom Brady in Trevor Lawrence, and you're able to kind of start your clock over again, whereas I don't see this being something that you're just going to snap your fingers and all of a sudden the Patriots are going to be back to being a competitor. And by the way, the AFC East is a whole hell of a lot tougher right now with the Dolphins starting to get better and the Bills playing well than it was back in the day. This is where you start. You start by the Jaguars going after Bill Belichick, not Urban Meyer.
All right, so a little bit fantasy land here, right, Peter? Right? I mean, like, first of all, Bill Belichick's got a contract with the Patriots. Second of all, like, the Jaguars.
Yes, contracts have never been broken ever before.
I know, but
right?
what are the Patriots going to say? Give us five first-round picks for Bill Belichick? Like, it's not going to be like, hey, give us a first-round pick. They say, oh, you want Bill Belichick? Fine, give us the first overall pick. Give us Trevor Lawrence, right? Like, the Patriots are not going to let Bill Belichick walk away. Bill Belichick does not want to walk away from what he has, which is a good thing going. He's got both of his sons on his staff.
What's he worth? If he can say, you know what, you're going to have full control of the Jaguars. We're not giving you the number one pick. You could bring your guy, your kids, and they could be on this, and your sons could be on the staff. Yeah. What is that truly worth to an NFL front office if you're the Patriots and you get the ask?
Oh, I think it's at least three first round picks to them. At least. I mean, talk about maybe the greatest coach in the history of professional sports. And it's not like coaches' primes, you know, can fade quickly, right? Like, if Bill Belichick wants to do this for 12 more years, he'll probably do it for 12 more years. I mean, it's never going to happen, obviously. But, you know, I suppose the fascinating what if, like, if you gave the Jaguars the opportunity to hire any coach, regardless of what his current status is, college, pro, contract, no contract, retired, still coaching, who would you pick and why? And it seems like the answer would be Bill Belichick, right?
So if that's the case, then you at least take a look.
No, there's so many more dynamics. There are other dynamics involved as well. Like, for example, that, you know, the Khan family, when they were looking to secure ownership of the Jaguars, you know, the Kraft family was an advocate for them, right? This would be one of those where it's like, you know, there's a certain level of respect that is afforded to the Krafts. And like, you don't even bother asking this question. Too much. It flies too close to the, you know.
I'm looking at it from the opposite side of it. And if you're the Patriots, right? I mean, you've clearly seen that the Patriots have a situation where are they one player away from better? Are they one player away from like competing in the AFC East? They're not. I mean, the Patriots, to me, look at a situation where they're lost at the quarterback situation. They're not. They don't have a ton of different talent at wide receiver like they've never really had. And it was all kind of taken care of because you had Tom Brady. Without that, if you're saying that if Belichick can't do it, what's the other way? If it's not the X's and O's, is it not the Jimmys and Joes that you could get and extract some draft picks out of the Jaguars? Again, I just think that there needs to be conversations had on both sides. And if not, I don't think you're doing your proper due diligence. That's all I'm saying about that. And also, it's a fun fantasy to deal with. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Monster breaking news that's happening in the college football playoff. There will be a major coach that will not be coaching in this game. We'll tell you who it is next. Peter Burns, Field Yates. Wow. This is Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
Max, the podcast.
Might want to talk about the news we're about to break, or not break, but it's out there. Peter Burns, Field Yates. This is the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. Always brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Clemson offensive coordinator and running backs coach Tony Elliott will be unavailable for Friday's All-State Sugar Bowl game against Ohio State while in COVID-19 protocols. Now, of course, if you've been paying attention, the Clemson Tigers have been nothing short of fantastic when they have been healthy enough to play. Only one defeat, but they were down several different players, including James Skowski and Trevor Lawrence, in that original game against Notre Dame. They got pretty much back to full strength of the ACC championship field, and they look like a completely different team. But this is a pretty monster blow for the Clemson Tigers, and something people were afraid of once we started looking at the timing of holiday time, Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban saying to their teams, hey, go out and spend time with your family over the holidays and get ready to go back and get into the college football playoff. We thought maybe it might be some players, but now arguably the third most important person on Clemson's team, their offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott, not going to be able to play or at least call plays in that game.
Yeah, Peter, like 12 hours ago when we started the show, actually before it, you told me like, hey, let's keep an eye out today for some of these potential announcements, because this would be the time that everybody has returned and started to gear up for final preparations for Friday's action. And not that we had any specific information, but now we know that Tony Elliott, who's not just like your run-of-the-mill offensive coordinator, right? He's regarded as one of the best in the country, regarded as a lock to be a future head coach, maybe at the pro level. To be, I know he's been on the radar of some of these NFL teams beyond the college teams that I'm sure will be calling his name at some point in the near off season. So big blow here. Obviously, you have Trevor Lawrence. You have a chance, but we'll be really interested. Do you have any insight or any thoughts on how they might fill Tony Elliott's vacancy?
No, so I believe if I'm not mistaken, it ends up being Brandon Streeter, who's the opportunity that I think is an opportunity for him to be back in. I don't know much about how they basically divvy up the responsibilities, because that's interesting as far as, you know, when you're missing some of your coordinators, sometimes now in the college football game, that's even more important rather than having the head coach. Because I feel like in as far as big time college football programs right now, I feel like for Nick Saban, you leave. Yes, you are. You know, he wasn't able to coach in the Iron Bowl because of COVID-19, and almost didn't coach at the Georgia game earlier this season when he had a COVID-19 scare. But he was able to have a coordinator fill in his role, right? It was more of a CEO type role of the program. Whereas in the coordinator, the first thing that pops into mind, Field, is going back to when Clemson and Alabama played in the national championship game a couple years ago. Remember, that was when Lane Kiffin was the offensive coordinator. Lane takes the Florida Atlantic job over at FAU and kind of acts like a petulant child and starts talking about how it's not real fun at Saban. And Saban's like, enough's enough, get out of here. Steve Sarkisian, on the fly, has to become the offensive coordinator. Now, mind you, Alabama didn't really necessarily sputter that week offensively, but it did lead to chaos, which ultimately helped or couldn't have hurt Clemson's chances of winning that that game, and they end up winning it. So I do think it is a significant change if you did have anybody other than Trevor Lawrence at the helm. I feel like Lawrence being there for so long, Field, he is a guy that could say, here's what we're calling, here's what I'm comfortable, all joking aside. And I honestly think Trevor is more comfortable about that than had it been the opposite side and Justin Fields not have his play caller right now.
Yeah, that could be fair. You know, what's interesting is that, so obviously we're 2 days away from the game. I presume Clemson found out this news earlier today. So they're going to have all day today and all day tomorrow to really gear up and prepare for how to accommodate not having Tony Elliott, their outstanding offensive coordinator, on the sidelines on Friday. My general sense is that this won't be the difference between Clemson winning or losing the game. Like, if they lose on Friday, it's because Ohio State's better than we have seen from them so far, right? But I will say that it's like one more thing for a staff to have to account for right now. And these operational things can end up carrying more weight in the days leading up to it than one might realize. It's not as simple as, like, who's the backup play caller, right? Like, you don't necessarily always figure out who the backup play caller would be until you actually have to figure out who the backup play caller would be, if that makes sense.
Right. You're not going through okay, here's what it looks like. And more importantly, you may have that idea in theory. Like, okay, listen, if hey, if Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator at Clemson, you can't go, who's calling plays? All right, you're calling plays. Until you actually get out there and you're the one calling plays, right? Like, you may have the plan, but the execution may not be different, or may be a whole lot different. So I'm intrigued to see how that happens. And I think also, bigger picture, we will still see more news within the next, 48 hours if there are players that will be out. Remember, Ohio State was out, 20-some-odd players.
Yeah, against Northwestern, 22 players they were down, which another part of the – this is why – this is our final segment here on Max Kellerman, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. And I'm starting to wonder, and maybe I'll be way off, and I'm not picking Ohio State to beat Clemson on Friday. But part of me is wondering if, like, maybe Ohio State is able to pull together their best, most cohesive, coherent effort of the season on Friday, just because, like, nothing has been normal in their first and only six games so far this season.
Go back and look at 2014. What was the blueprint that they looked? Remember, they had the real, people were thinking, oh, this team's no chance of
getting
Carl in.
12-gauge, Carl Jones.
Right. They go in, Cardell Jones, third string quarterback, he comes in and leads it to and defeating Alabama in route to being able to be a national champion in 2014. So chaos can happen. I will say this, for last thoughts on this, for Clemson, I think it's more important, I think Brent Venables calling that defense is more important than Tony Elliott calling that offense. Okay, so because for me, I think if Venables is not there, Venables has been able to put up together an unbelievable game plan for the majority of the season, and I think that Justin Fields is a guy that can be rattled, especially if against the blitz. I think he was 0-5 with a couple of picks against Northwestern. Field, that's one of the things where there's a lot of pressure on Justin Fields going into this college football playoff semifinal against Clemson over on Friday for his future in the NFL as well.
Yeah, there is so much at stake here for Justin Fields. It's not just Ohio State and having the chance to win, which would be a monumental win for the program, a great win for the program, but he has started to lose some momentum as the second best or most valuable prospect in the 2021 draft class. It's Trevor Lawrence and everybody else, but even in the most recent Todd McShay mock draft, Zach Wilson has overtaken him from BYU, so a big, huge stage ahead for Justin Fields on Friday.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.